Who's showing him the village's meeting place and sharing some of his wisdom. The reader is Philip Franks.
The chief proudly cast his hand around. This Nakamal, he explained, was a famous one. One of the original 12 built by the ancestor gods of the island. Between each, he explained reverently, they put a road. And between each road, more roads to join them. I did my best to look impressed, but I didn't really understand. Passing from and to every important place on this island, there is a road, the chief added, for good measure. Except up there. He pointed towards Mount Tukasmuera. Kalbaban put no roads there. But I thought Prince Philip rode away to find Queen Lisbeth on a white horse, I said, referring to a classic myth collected on the island by anthropologists. How could he do that if there wasn't a road? Many roads are blocked, the chief carried on, disregarding my question. This is when problems happen on the island, because people ignore the roads. You see? I nodded, but the chief shook his head. When Naku comes, he will help to explain, the chief said, and a murky look swept across his devout face. Where is he? The chief's sudden irritation reminded me of a comment Kirk Huffman made when I told him I was going to Tana with Naku. He'd known him in the 80s, employed him as a field worker to assist visiting anthropologists, and on that subject noted only that the arrangement hadn't quite worked out. He'd also said something like, "You're going to be Naku's ticket, are you?" And I'd replied that yes, I was paying for his airfare, but I got the impression that hadn't been quite what he meant. Chief Jack bade me sit on a simple bench outside his quarters. He disappeared inside, and shortly afterwards emerged, ready to show me the secrets of his faith. The mildewed contents of an old cream cracker box. A collection of newspaper clippings about the royal family. There were bits about Charles and his organic farm, outrage over Prince Harry and his drunken antics, and of course, Philip, offending entire nations, presiding over unspeakably dull committees. How do you get all this stuff? I asked. Friends all across the world send it. At that instant, a sweaty work party filed through the village. Among them was the chief's other son, Carl. He murmured something in his father's ear, glaring at me all the while. He wants to know if you are happy to be on Tana again. This is my first time, I said. No, it isn't, Chief Jack replied amiably. How did you know how to make the tamafa last night when you drank the kaffa? The what? The chief explained that when the sun went down, the nakamal filled with the spirits of the dead. To make requests of them, big yams, healthy children, victory over rivals, Tana men spat a little of their kaffa onto the ground. I'd done it perfectly last night. I was delighted, but felt obliged to be truthful. It was just a mistake. The chief sniffed the air in a particularly magisterial way. But you brought us clay pipes, and as you drank, we watched you look across at... He licked his lips and glanced theatrically at the cloud-swaddled mountain behind us. At that hill as well. Tukasmuera. Chief Jack's eyes narrowed. How do you know the name of that hill? Just like the pipes. I read it in a book. I mean, not a book. Some letters from Prince Philip. I have them here in my bag. Show them to me, commanded the chief. Not exactly from Prince Philip, I clarified, rummaging through my bag. From his office. His secretary. The man who writes his letters.
In Buckingham Palace?
Yes.
Give them.
I handed over the sheaf of many times photocopied pages. It included a brief summary of the cult, written by Kirk Huffman, and an outline of the major myths. I watched as my little archive was divvied up and pored over by the village, huddling in packs over sheets of paper they couldn't read. Chief Jack thrust one of them back at me.
Read it.
A boat sailed past, three-masted, red, black, and white, I began cautiously. The men waved at me, irritated.
Stand up! Cried the chief.
I did as he said, and continued. Inside sat the king. Sometimes he wore a captain's uniform, a suit of gold and silver. Sometimes he was a cowboy. As the boat sailed past the rock called Nuaru, a man from a nearby village was sitting by the sea. This man knew that the Kafa speaks to us only when we are quiet. So he sat alone, close to the rock, drinking the Kafa his son had prepared for him. The Kafa made the man see. And he watched as the king came to stand on the deck of his boat, gazing out at Tana. He was strong and tall, a man who rode a white horse, a man who fought in World War II. But his face was sad. I glanced at the chief. His mahogany face cracked with concentration. The king's wife came to stand by him on his left-hand side. The man on the beach heard her because he was drinking kafa.
My dear, asked the king's wife, tell me what is wrong.
I have to tell you a secret, the king said. He pointed to the rock, Nuaru. The name of that rock is Nuaru. In my language, it means, I am coming.
What language?
The language of that place, the king replied, and of all the villages that lie behind the rock, of the mountain you can see above them. That is my home. Its name is Tukasmuera. My father is there. I am not a white man. I am from Tana, and one day I will leave you and return. I am coming back to that rock, and when I put my foot on it, mature kafa roots will spring from the ground, the old men will become young again, and there will be no more sickness or death. As I finished, the crowd slapped their shins in applause. The chief waved a finger at them to be quiet.
This came to you from Prince Philip?
No. Yes, it came from here. Somebody told this story to a man who worked here, and he told Prince Philip.
When?
At the time you were angry because the government man had made you unhappy, and you asked for something from the British government to make you glad again.
Ah, yes. Man belong government. Mr. Wilkie,
Chief Jack said.
We gave Mr. Wilkie a pig. He didn't give anything back.
He was referring to the resident commissioner, Mr. Alexander Mayor Wilkie. In 1966, I know, I said. And about 11 years later, the British government realized you were angry, so they wanted to know about you and the things you believed. So a man called Kirk Huffman wrote a letter about it to Buckingham Palace, and then, a long time later, Prince Philip's secretary told me.
Cook Guffman, mused the chief. Yes, that man is my friend. You call him Kirk Huffman, but we know his name is Cook Guffman,
he continued, stressing the last word, which meant government in Bishlama.
Because he is a gate.
Okay.
We told Cook Guffman what we wanted, and through him, Prince Philip spoke to us.
This was close to the historical record. During the 70s, an Australian businessman named Bob Paul had developed an affectionate relationship with the men of the Yokanannan area. He'd been told their local mountain was occupied by a spirit called Kalbaben, who had many famous sons, among them the Duke of Edinburgh. And some token of the latter, they said, would compensate for the insult they'd been dealt over the pig. Bob Paul told the British Residency, who were preparing to leave for good as the New Hebrides became independent. They, in turn, consulted anthropologist Kirk Huffman, whose report into the matter was sent straight to the palace. As a result, the photograph was presented by a delegation from the British Residency, along with five clay pipes. There was kafa and dancing and a speech, in which the last resident, Andrew Champion, told the Tannese that Britain would never forget them. Another photograph was sent, and more letters passed between Buckingham Palace and that distant mountain village. All of which, as Prince Philip and his advisers knew full well, acted to encourage a group of people in a belief that was untrue. I still wanted to know why. The chief had me read all the others. Tales of Prince Philip, of his journey across the seas to Europe, of all the miracles he had already wrought for the people of Tanna, and one thing became diamond clear. Neither the chief nor anyone in his village had heard a word of them. The chief had me go once again through the section of the myth where Prince Philip's boat sailed past Anatyum. This had really happened, and it dated the story to the second royal visit to the area in 1974.
"I saw him then,"
Chief Jack said, his eyes misting over.
"Some of us went across to Vila, and I was in a canoe that rowed out to the ship to greet him."
"What did Philip look like?" I asked.
"Sad, like the story. But we know why. You call his house Buckingham Palace, but we know what it really means."
The chief paused for dramatic effect.
"Back e go home paradise." He clapped his hands. "Because he is sick with longing for Tanna."
"Back e go home paradise? Cook Gathman?" Wordplay, it seemed, was a major contributor to the Tannese brand of mysticism. "Perhaps," I offered, "perhaps someone in another village told these stories to Kirk Huffman."
"And asked him to put these stories on a piece of paper? Why? Who on Tanna would do that?"
"Ha!" cried the chief. I supposed this was a copyright problem. Yochanan regarded itself as rightful owner of everything under the Prince Philip franchise. So the arrival of this collection of unknown stories, seemingly from Philip's hand itself, was a blow to the foundations. An idea struck me. Maybe I could find out for you. Possibly on Tanna, with its mind-warping mesh of ever-shifting loyalties, a visitor might find out more about this mysterious case of myth theft than someone from the aggrieved village itself.
"You should certainly visit the other villages," Chief Jack decreed after much thought. "Then you might learn something. Nako will help you."
The chief pointed at my microphone and murmured something to Nako. "When you go to ask the people in the other places," Nako said, "you put their voices into that camera and you give it to my father." He gazed at me intently. A deal was being offered here. My donkey work and technology in return for the innermost secrets of the Philip cult. The voice recorder, I imagined, was desired so that the chief could store and replay the evidence of his neighbour's betrayal, should it be found. It was just as everyone had told me it would be. No knowledge for free. I nodded, and the chief smiled serenely.
Philip Franks was reading from Man Belong, Mrs. Queen by Matthew Bayliss. It's abridged and produced by Jill Waters, and it's a Waters Company production for BBC Radio 4. We'll return to the island tomorrow. OK then, all together now. This is BBC Radio 4. And now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Wednesday, the 1st of January, 2014. There are warnings of gales in all areas. The general synopsis at 1800, low, mid-Atlantic, 982, expected southeast Malin, 966 by 1800 Wednesday. Low, 200 miles west of Rockall, 965, expected 100 miles west of Rockall, 964 by same time. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours, Viking, north at Cirra, south at Cirra, southeasterly 6 to gale 8, perhaps severe gale 9 later, veering southerly 5 to 7 for a time. Rain, then showers. Good, occasionally poor. 40s, Cromarty, Forth, Tyne, Dogger, Fisher, German Bight, Humber. South, 5 to 7, backing southeast, 6 to gale 8, perhaps severe gale 9 later. Rain or squally showers. Good, occasionally poor. Thames, Dover, Wight. Southwest, 6 to gale 8, backing south, 7 to severe gale 9 later. Showers, then rain. Good, becoming moderate or poor. Portland, Plymouth, Biscay. Southwest, backing south for a time, 6 to gale 8, occasionally severe gale 9. Showers, then rain. Good, becoming moderate or poor. Trafalgar, southwesterly, 5 to 7, occasionally gale 8 in north. Occasional rain, moderate or good, occasionally poor. Fitzroy, Seoul, southwest, veering west later, 7 to severe gale 9. Rain or squally showers, moderate or poor.